Are you tired of the head coaching thing yet? You tired of it, Angel?
I'm getting tired. Listen, it's fun to talk about. It's fun to kind of dream about what it's going to look like for the Broncos. But the more we go on with this, the longer we take, I suppose the more unsure I am about the ownership group today. Now, I told Tanner this, like, because he's just of the mindset that the ownership's fine. Russell's fine now, which I thought he hated, but now he's like, yeah, he's fine. He's fixable. I do think that the owners will get better at this. It's not like I'm saying that the Broncos are doomed. You know, I think in our segment in the 11 o'clock hour, Angel, Tanner brought up, you know, if you think that this ownership group is just incompetent, and I don't think that's the right word. I think they're rookies as owners. And they just because you ran business and you owe and you're multi-billionaires, it's a different business. So saying that the corporate structure is the same, no, the NFL is a completely different animal than anything else they're used to. So I do think that there's going to be some growing pains, which is to be expected, but that's also why you hire a general manager that can kind of hold your hand through this process. You're not going to take over day one and be Jerry Jones. And I'm not saying Greg Penner wants to be Jerry Jones right now, but he is cowboying this. He is taking this over. He's taking the head coach search over. He took it over. You know it was him ultimately that put the pressure on George Payton to fire Nathaniel Hackett. Dixon says, the message I'm also getting, is that the Broncos job is not very appealing to many of these guys. Well, that's the message that I'm getting. Jim Harbaugh. They interviewed him via Zoom. Seemed like it went well. And I don't know how true this is, Angel, but what I had heard and read from people that I trust was that Harbaugh was kind of like, yeah, okay, let's rock and roll here. And then the Broncos were like, we liked you, Jim. It was good, but we're still going to go through the process here. We have other interviews, and we're going to continue those other interviews. Oh, well, then I guess I'll just go back to Michigan then, because I'm ready now, and if you guys aren't for sure, then I don't want to screw around. I might as well go, because I got signing days coming up. You know, all that stuff. So I gotta go back. And then, I mean, why would D'Amico Ryans essentially tell the Broncos he was out if he wasn't their next up? Guys that I really trust were saying that it was D'Amico Ryans was going to be, he was the favorite. Well, now he's with Houston. He's going to be with Houston. I think it's a foregone conclusion, right, that he'll be with Houston.
He finished his second interview with them today in Houston.
So I would imagine that's going to be a done deal. Then it was Sean Payton. That's what I feel. Well, Dan Quinn was there too. And then obviously Dan Quinn pulled out last week and didn't go with any of them and just said, I want to stay with the Cowboys. Dixon says Quinn wants to stay in Dallas. Ryan chooses the freaking Texans. Well, I disagree with Tanner a lot. I disagree with him on this too. I think the Texans job right now is more appealing than the Broncos job. Because you have two first-round picks. I mean, I'm a Broncos fan. You know, I was a diehard fan growing up, and then getting into the sports talk world, you know, I'm still a fan, but you look at things differently. I would have said 10 years ago as a fan, or 12 years ago, whenever before I started the show, yeah, this is a great job. This is the Broncos, man. It's the Broncos. I have to be realistic about this. This is not one of the top jobs in the NFL anymore. The Broncos they're not irrelevant, like I said, to Angels Dolphins. They're a laughing stock. Going back to after winning the Super Bowl, it was clunky with how they handled Brock Osweiler, Gary Kubiak. It was clunky when they thought about hiring Kyle Shanahan and Mike Shanahan. There was a power struggle there. That was weird. The draft processes were weird. The commitment to certain players and non-commitment to others was weird. Perhaps the contract for Von Miller was weird. Drafting Bradley Chubb over Josh Allen was weird. a lot of strange situations for the Denver Broncos that led them here. They went with Vance Joseph when everything that I had heard with my guys was that Kyle Shanahan was more of the guy that year. And then maybe Mike in some kind of maybe combo or whatever. But Joe Ellis shut that down, allegedly, that from Elway's camp. That basically, Ellis was the one who was like, no. The trust came in and said, we can't go back and get Mike Shanahan. Pat Bowlen was the one who moved on from him. That would be maybe disrespectful. I don't know what the thinking was. There was a falling out between Ellis and Mike Shanahan. So that was bad. That was handled poorly. And then you just continued to have more of these. You brought Joe Flacco in. You know, you signed Case Keenum to a 2-year deal, big money at the time, big money for him. Move after move kept setting this organization back. You know, in hindsight being 2020, should Denver have stuck it out with Vic Fangio? Should they have stuck it out with Nathaniel Hackett? I said on one of the promos that's running on the station is you have to find consistency. Sometimes you just have to take it. And maybe the Broncos, if that Christmas game wouldn't have happened the way it happened, Angel, I think I'd be more upset that the Broncos fired Nathaniel Hackett. Not because he was good, but that maybe he could learn. Maybe he can get, just like I said, the ownership group can get better. Nathaniel Hackett could get better. That Christmas game was an outlier, though, man. I mean, it was so embarrassing on national TV. I find it hard to really blame them, but I'm just not a big, whether it's college football or the NFL, I really think that it takes 2 to 3 years. I think there is such a thing as saying, come in and lay your foundation. And that's hard to do when you get Russell Wilson and basically it's like, playoffs or bust. And it was. They busted. They busted out their head coach.
Do you think a Sean Payton would bring that level of patience for multiple years? Or is the situation that the Broncos are currently in just, it's, you're not going to get anything out of it? It doesn't matter who the coach is. Because if Payton comes and they go 9-8.
That's a disappointed. Yeah. Disappointment.
If Payton's the fix-all, if Payton, he has to fix it all.
Yes. I think the fans that aren't, so my poll question today is, would you be happy if the Broncos hired Sean Payton? And there's a good chunk that's saying yes. I did a vote last night, too, about would you trade 2 first-rounders, and everybody said no. But 63% of the hooligans are saying yes. I think if you're 63% of the hooligans, you'd be happy, but you expect playoffs. The 36% that are saying no at thewholeshow.com won't be happy, but they expect playoffs. Because the 36% are going to be like me. Okay, you traded all your draft picks. It better freaking work. Sean Payton better be a freaking magician. So I think more pressure now suddenly is on him and Russ next year than it was even this year with Hackett. The expectations are playoffs.
And does Payton want to go into a system where it's you have to get to the playoffs, or I can take 2-3 years to build this up and get him, you know, maybe we'll get to the playoffs 1 or 2 times. Because the expectations are going to be playoffs if he comes to Denver.
Absolutely.
And I think he knows that.
Yeah, I mean, it will be playoffs or bust. At the beginning of the season this year, Angel, we all expected playoffs. All of us. I thought this team, Mr. I know Dixon likes to say I'm Mr. 11. I thought so. I really did. However, there was still a thought that maybe the Broncos are in this for the long haul. That was reported by several Denver insiders, was that the Broncos were not putting pressure on this season as the end-all be-all to get into the playoffs because they believe that Russ and Hackett, they were going to work those two together and they would be in it for the long haul going forward. Obviously, things got so bad because you had to bring in Rosberg with game management. You had to change up who was calling your plays. You just had outrageous moments in games, the Colts game, the Seattle game, just a lot of weird stuff happened. And then the Christmas game. You know, we heard the report before they went to London to play Jacksonville that if the Broncos don't win in London, Hackett's done. We heard that, right? That's obviously not good because that doesn't mean he won. That doesn't mean anything about the future, though. That just means we're not going to make the move today. You're going to make the flight back with us to America. this situation, though, Tanner said, I feel like I'm ripping him apart. Actually, he brings up good points. I do feel that way. I just disagree with those points. But he said everything hinges on Russell Wilson. And I guess where I'm going with this, Angel, is if everything hinges on Russell Wilson, then isn't it on Russell Wilson to just be the quarterback they thought they got? So that means even an average coach could come in, a young coach, whatever, could get the best out of Russ because Russ just gets better. He figures it out. He's more comfortable in Denver. He does some deep soul searching and all that. They change up a scheme that works for him that he maybe doesn't all for, but he understands what he needs to do.
Yeah, and I think if it's Peyton, he's going to take the brunt of that responsibility. If it's any other coach, it's on Russ.
And I think, and that's why, Angel, the idea of maybe toughing it out with Nathaniel Hackett isn't as far-fetched, to me at least, because you could have just said, no, we think one more year, we go status quo here. We obviously, you saw, well, Outen came afterward, but Outen was the play caller with Rosberg. And that's, I'm just interrupting my own train of thought. Why not just go with Rosberg? You saw the best Russell Wilson you saw all season consistently. I don't know if those two games, each one was one of his best games. I think he had one of his best games, the Seattle game. I think he had one of the Raiders games was really good. The final drive against San Francisco was really good. But consistently, two games in a row, Russ was his best. So there is more of a thought, like, why not just go with Rosberg? Stay with Evereaux as D coordinator. Out in two games in a row, called a good game. Why not stay that course?
Could you keep Evereaux even though you've told him, I don't want you as my head coach?
I don't know. Probably not, right? He can't go get a coordinator job anywhere else, though, unless the new coach fires him. Which I would... why not go Rosberg and then say, Evereaux, keep doing you, man. Keep doing exactly what you did this year in your rookie year as a D coordinator, and you'll take Rosberg's job when the time comes. But that... Everything we're hearing is the Broncos are going to go big. They're swinging for the fences. Well, Jerry Rosberg is not exactly swinging for the fences. That's a walk. You just hope the pitcher sucks and you walk to first base. Sean Payton, yeah. That'd be an expensive home run. You paid a lot for that slugger to hit that home run. Jim Harbaugh would be an interesting little steal. Second base. Still second base. Dan Quinn would be an unbelievable triple. Because you convince him to stay, get out of Dallas. D'Amico Ryans would be... I don't know how I feel about the D'Amico Ryans one. Is that a single? Is that good? I don't know. 17 minutes after the hour, CSU playing UNLV tonight. See if they can beat Vegas again. They did beat them once this season. Can they do it again? We'll talk to Mike Brohard of CSURams.com. Coming up next, it's the whole show powered by PDC Energy. I'm Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 at 1310 KFKA.
Join Clark Johnson and Bruce Dick for Clark and their Coach. Weekdays at 10 on Northern Colorado's Voice. 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
This is Nico Medved, the men's basketball coach of the Colorado State Rams, and you're listening to The Hull Show on 1310 KFKA.
Just 21 minutes after the 1 o'clock hour. Joining me now on our First Advantage hotline from CSURams.com, Mike Brohard. Mike, my man, I'm kind of interested to see what Colorado State does football side of things as we're talking a little signing day and such to see how they add to that program.
Well, I think you're going to find that they made most of their noise in December with the initial signing day. Because I can't tell you right off the bat. But anyhow, there'll be some additions, and then I think there would still be some wiggle room that should something happen. And I think most teams, most programs are doing that. like after spring, you get another jolt of guys leaving, things like that, where guys that are waiting to graduate so they can actually go in as graduate transfers, and they leave a little wiggle room open for that. Or maybe somebody who's already on roster that's really kind of earned that scholarship.
So thus far, you know, like you said, going back to the December portion of the early signing day and such, and then now to kind of do the fine tuning and such and adding a few more spots there. Obviously, Mike, we've talked about it before, but the offensive line, that's the big one, getting better on the offensive line. How do you feel that the Rams have done so far in that department as far as upgrading?
Well, they brought in some experience, guys that have played, and it might not have been at the Division I level, but they've played. And I think, like you've seen with like Patrick Cardian and the basketball team, just because you play Division II doesn't mean you can't play Division I. He's obviously made the transition really well, and I think you can, you know, anticipate some of that happening. Like I talked to Oliver Jervis for a story I did today. Very in tune, very in line. He looks the part of a Division I offensive lineman, but you're going to have to go out there and watch him see. But what they didn't have was they didn't have a lot of depth, and that meant they didn't have any competition. So you couldn't make guys better. You couldn't push guys to get better. That's what you're going to see that's been added so far, especially when it comes to the offensive line, because I think everybody knows if the offensive line doesn't improve, it's going to be a slow roll, you know?
Yeah, no question. Have to get that right. And Mike, let me ask you this. With the four air raid style of offense, I was thinking about this the other day. What are you looking for as far as like sizes in offensive linemen? You're not necessarily looking for monsters, right? You need guys that can move a little bit. What are you looking for as far as that weight goes? I mean, are we looking in the 300s, 300 plus, a little less than that? I was kind of curious as far as how O-linemen fit in with the four air raid style.
I think most of the time right now when you're looking at it, you're almost looking at 300 across the board no matter what kind of style of offense you're playing. Now, do you need them to be rope graders? Probably not. But you need guys that have really good technique, that have length in their arms, especially a tackle, to keep guys away and pushed outside to create that pocket. But you do need guys, and obviously, that was interesting. We were obviously a better run team last year than we were a pass team. When you look at the numbers of the fact, you know, Avery had a pretty good year, and then you look at the fact that, you know, he had some 100-yard games. Now, on the other hand, when Clay had time, he was high percentage, and he could throw the deep ball. So that's where you look at the passing game as a place where they become more explosive, faster. So, but you're going to want offensive linemen that can do both, but you're definitely looking for guys that can play with that pass block mentality, long arms, keep people at bay, create that pocket around Clay.
Well, I know, like you said, to start with, is the competition factor will be so big, too, just having these guys compete. I mean, fact is, Mike, it just felt like you just kept running out of bodies last year,
yeah.
So you had to get pretty creative with your offensive line combinations.
Right, Brady. You know, and one thing I brought up to Bill Best last year, because I was curious about it, and I talked to Kevin Lytle about this, because we talk on the sidelines about things. It's like, wow, this seems weird. Something seems off here. So I went back and looked it up. The last time that Colorado State had a high school player become an all-conference performer on the offensive line, it was 2012 with Fred Zerblis, and then 2013 with Jake Bennett, Zach Goldich, and Trey Moxley. That's 9 years since Colorado State has brought in a high school offensive lineman and developed them into an all-conference player. So what we're talking about now is not just a Jay Norvell problem. They inherited it, and they inherited it. I mean, this has been going on Bobo's years. They didn't do that with anybody. You got to remember, the best high school offensive lineman during the Bobo era was Barry Wesley, and he walked on. So you're going back to like Jim McElwain's recruiting classes when a high school offensive lineman became an all-conference.
Wow. It's been kind of an issue for a while, and especially, you know, like what we saw last year. It's hard to really grasp that. You know, fans, of course, they were excited to see four air raid, and then when they didn't see that, they're like, what is this? Well, you can't really start with four air raid until you have that offensive line. I mean, the timing and everything is just so far off. You need that time, especially. So it was hard to get that full glimpse of what four air raid's actually going to look like.
Right. You know, there are certain things, like you'll look at sacks and last year, Colorado State led the nation in sacks allowed with 55. That's a number you don't want. You go back to year before when this offense was at Nevada, and they gave up 36, I believe, in the regular season. And that seems like a lot, but you're going to give up more sacks when you drop back that much. And then you start looking at the sacks. Are they all on the offensive line? No, they're not. Some of it's on, you know, the running backs and pass pro, even on the tight ends. Some of them are on Clay, who was a redshirt freshman quarterback starting for the first time, held on to the ball too long. Now, you'll even look at some of those, and if you look at them, if they happen on a third down, and it's third and long, and he knows he's got to make a play, and he's going to try and extend the play, and he ends up taking a sack, unless it takes you out of field goal position or it takes you out of the red zone, you don't really complain about a sack like that. You're looking for a guy that's trying to make a play to get you out of a bad spot. So there's different ways of looking at it, but the one way to look at it, 55, too big a number, got to fix it.
Mike Brohard joining us, Rams insider for CSURams.com. Mike, on the defensive side of the ball, I mean, for the most part, they're bringing a good chunk of their studs back. So this defense should be pretty good again next year, right?
Yeah, you're gonna miss CJ. He was really good on the edge, but you bring back Mo Kamara, and you've got some experience, and you had some youth on the defensive line that got better last year as the year went along. So that's exciting for them. They do have to carve out their linebacker spot, and they're going to have to find guys that come in and play that. But then again, you also got to love your secondary. I mean, you got safeties out the wazoo. You've got Chiggy coming back on a corner. You can develop some other corners, and that looks pretty good.
No question about it, man. I'm excited to see what Freddie Banks can do with that defense next season. Mike, going on to the basketball side tonight, a big one for the Rams. They took care of UNLV in Vegas. Can they do it at home? They're actually 3-point favorites tonight, so we'll see. Again, we know Isaiah Stevens is going to be good, and Cartier's been pretty good. I think what I want to see is if John Tonje can find some consistency and really get going for this Rams team, because I think if he can, maybe the Rams can start to turn it around here, with the last, 8 or 9 games of the season.
Yeah, Tonje is one for me. You want to see some consistency out of him, especially considering he's a senior. You also like to see Jalen Lake, I think, is another X factor for this team. If his shot gets going and he gets consistent with it, that's another consistent threat that they have offensively. But you also want to see them continue to play better defense. That's what you've got. They've got to be tied together in that realm to make this really kind of to make a run here at the end. And this is, you're looking at, the top six teams, I think, in the league, top five, all have winning records, bottom six don't. This is a chance for some of you in the bottom to try to work your way closer to the top. Get on a street going into the Mountain West tournament.
Mike, on the women's side of things, last time you and I chatted, they lost a close one, their second close one to UNLV. Well, since then, they lost to New Mexico on the road and Air Force on the road. Close games, again, when they lose, they're right there. They get back at it, are they playing on Thursday going up against Utah State? So it'd be nice if they can, break that 3-game losing streak. This is such a good basketball team. It's kind of a shock to see a couple of L's the last couple of games.
Yeah, it is. Especially, I think, the Air Force game. But Air Force has that tendency to kind of muck up things and make it difficult on offense. And a couple people had, off nights for them, and that results in a 2-point. It's the one thing that Colorado State, though, is going to look at. They haven't done really well on the women's side in close games, games decided by, 5 points or less. They're not doing – they've got to find a way to close out those close ones, because that's what you're going to start getting as you get closer and closer to tournament play. They're going to be close games. You're not going to be blowing out a bunch of these teams. In a Wyoming and an Air Force, their style of play keeps it fairly close. So you've got to find a way to get that closing touch. And then if you want to, Thursday, I don't know, can you make it Thursday? It's an 11 a.m. tip.
I could do the show from there, Mike. What do you think? You could jump on with me.
I think you could. It would be really loud because, it's school day. So I think there's 90 school buses coming from the Thompson School District and the Pooter School District. We're going to flood this place with youthful lungs.
It should be great. Well, they could take over. One of those kids could jump on and do the show. What do you think?
They could help, yeah.
Mike, appreciate you, man. I'm looking forward to tonight. I really think I don't know, man. I think there's going to be a turn at some point, and we're going to see some consistent wins here for Colorado State on the men's side of things. We'll see. But I think they get the dub tonight, man. I think they take it to UNLV again. I hope it doesn't have to come down to another crazy half court, crazy finisher in overtime, because I don't know. My heart can't take that all the time.
Look at you. I'm proud of you, Brady.
Positive.
You sound positive.
Yeah, it's a positive. I knew you were coming on. See, 12 o'clock, normally I have you on at 12:20. That's negative, Brady. 1 o'clock hour is positive, Brady. I'm almost done. So maybe, you know, this is the different versions. 3 hours, you get three different versions.
Okay. Yeah, well, okay. I like the positive guy. Kind of, I don't have to talk you off the ledge.
Yeah, the 1 o'clock Brady, man. It's lunch. I'm going to go grab lunch soon, so looking forward to that. It's kind of a different world, my friend. Mike, what are you working on? We can check out at CSURams.com.
I took a look at football off-season conditioning. The winter is always so important in terms of building bulk and building strength, but more importantly, in talking to the players, while that's key, they have to become a team at that time. And that's what they're really striving to try to do. And that's what Jordan Sims is trying to do with his strength and speed program. Really bring this group together so that they're fighting for each other and build that culture that every successful team is going to need.
I'm pulling it up right now, Mike. I'll check it out a little bit later on this afternoon. Appreciate you as always. And we'll catch up with you next week.
That's fine. You can send me a grade later. Let me know if I did good or bad.
Oh, I will. I'll give you. I'm going to really break into this and give you some thoughts here. You know, get my red pen out.
All right. Sounds good. I appreciate it.
All right, Mike. We'll talk to you soon, man.
Take care, guys.
Mike Brohard. CSURams.com. Check it out. Building More Than Muscles, available at CSURams.com. 34 minutes after the hour on Chell. Let's jump out and get the latest on the local sports flash.
Hi, I'm Darren Dunn, Director of Athletics at the University of Northern Colorado, and you're listening to The Whole Show, 1310 KFKA.
Nuggets back in action tonight. Going up against the Pelicans. That's going to be on TNT. 8 o'clock. That's cool. Nuggets are 6.5-point favorite. Is Jamal going tonight?
He was questionable last I checked.
So this team needs a break, dude. They need the All-Star break.
Played in like 3 days.
I know, but they're hurt. I mean, Joker missed that Milwaukee game. Porter, I think, needs a mental break, probably. Jamal's banged up. You got guys that are banged up right now. They need the All-Star break.
Is that next weekend?
It's like 15 days.
Okay.
So not next weekend. I think that weekend. Right? Yeah, something like that.
That's a big game, though.
Yeah, it is. You know, Denver was so hot there for a moment. And really, you know, again, the schedule was interesting. The way they played Milwaukee was interesting, but you know, they've lost three out of the last four. And their last win was against New Orleans. So, you know, you're not certainly not panicking or anything like that. But these are the kind of situations where you go, okay, the great teams can have that. Great teams lose three out of four sometimes. That happens. How are you going to recover tonight? And that'll be a big one because then you play, you're home against Golden State on Thursday. And then Atlanta, and then you get the Minnesota thing going on again. First Advantage text line, 888-530-0043. Okay, so let's say Bones goes off tonight. What does that do? Does that change? Does that make you want to keep him more? Because if you're Calvin Booth, you know that could happen. You're not saying it couldn't happen. He could go off tonight. He could also be average and have three turnovers and have a bad plus minus.
Well, it is a home game. We know how much Bones loves playing at home. He loves to get that crowd going with those crazy 40-foot three-pointers.
Do we see a reserved Bones Highland, you know, as far as emotion? Like, if he gets a big score, is he going to get into it with the crowd?
If there's anything.
I don't know.
I don't think if you put Bones and low emotion together.
I don't know. I've never seen Bones sad, and it seems like from his Twitter. Like, I love that he's putting out all the verses and stuff. I mean, yes, that's amazing. I love it. But yeah, some of the tweets are kind of like, you know, not part of the plan, or you don't see the what did he say? Just be patient. We're going to get it forever. There was one yesterday was you may not know now, but later you'll understand.
I just feel like if he was tweeting that stuff out, he would know something's up. Obviously, he would hear the rumors and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But if he knew for sure I'm going to be traded, wouldn't we know by now? Other than, oh, they're just gauging his value.
Yeah. Nah, what is it, a week away? When's the trade deadline?
Next week.
A lot of times you don't know until it happens. You just hear it, and then it happens. So
if he is potentially being traded, why play him?
Increase the value more?
Or decrease the value.
Could.
If he gets
hurt. It's a gamble, but you don't want to not play him because then people wonder, is he hurt? Or
well, then if you don't play him and then you don't trade him, and then it's, oh, you sad bones for like three games.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah, you could increase the value. You could decrease the value. I don't know if you can. Because that's who he is right now. He's an inconsistent player.
I mean, it's a national game. People are going to be watching it. Casual NBA fans are going to be watching it because they're like, oh, who's this Bones Highland guy? I hear all about him. He's going to be traded. What? Why? And they might want to check in. And if he has a bad night, like a Bones bad night, then it's, oh, who's going to trade for that? Mm-hmm. If he has a great night, it's, why are they trading him?
Right.
It's a very tough situation for this team.
It's a weird situation. And again, it's like I talked about earlier, the timing is just tough for Bones. Eastside Chris, if Bones goes off tonight, it might enhance his trade value. Yeah, it would. It
reinvigorate your fan base into saying, do not trade this guy. We love him too much. And I get it. That doesn't affect the play on the court. But when you need that guy that's going to get the crowd going in a playoff atmosphere in Ball Arena and Bones hits a 40-foot three, it's going to go crazy.
Yeah, if you could just get Bones, I think, again, what Dempsey said yesterday, if you guys missed that interview, check it out at theholeshow.com. Podcasts are there, 1310kfk.com. You know, Bones plays like he's scared he's never going to get the ball back. And that is hard to do when you are asked to be a guard and sometimes a point guard. This team thrives on distributing the basketball. They're at their best when they're doing that. Bones is perhaps one of the weaker guard / small forwards as far as ball distribution. Jamal's not the best in the world either. There's sometimes that ball gets sticky with Jamal. I've noticed that. I think he's trying to make things happen. And I think Jamal's constantly moving around trying to make things happen. I think Bones is like, I can't get rid of this because they're not going to look for me again. Because he doesn't create, this is Porter's problem at first too, is he doesn't create a lot without the ball.
Do you think Malone's choice to stagger the lineups with Jamal spending a time with the bench unit, do you think that throws Bones off in that?
Stunts his growth a little bit?
I'm supposed to be the starting guard for our bench. Or if it's Jamal trying out the two position and Bones is the one, you're just mixing and matching your guards and you're not getting consistency. The bench unit doesn't know who to look at for the leader. Yeah, you're the point guard, but you're not the shot maker.
Yeah, there's some truth to that because there's a lot of teams, a lot of guys in basketball that it's kind of like this is your unit, especially in the first half because this is your unit. You're on with this group at this time. Second half, things change a little bit. Joker might come in a little bit earlier. Jamal might stay a little longer, especially in that first half, though. And yeah, there could be something. That's like a quarterback.
Also, if Jamal's in takeover mode, which you kind of saw against Philly, where he kind of just goes off for a quick spurt.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a quarterback situation, too, where like I remember Peyton Manning, even when they were winning by like 30, and there's 4 minutes left, Brock Osweiler's wanting to go put his helmet on to be out there, and Manning wouldn't let him go. And it's like, dude, you got 4 minutes to see how Brock runs this offense, you know, whether he's throwing it or not, just running the offense, running the huddle, gaining some confidence. And I think that's true with basketball, too, is when you stagger guys, yes, it's supposed to lift the bench up because you're bringing a starter in that's going to stay with the bench and give you some of those important minutes. But does it stunt growth of younger players that are trying to develop that? Yeah, sure. I think that's a reasonable assessment. I just wonder how, like, I read the Denver Post article about Bol Bol, and I just read that thinking, okay, he says he wished he would have worked harder when he was in Denver. It does seem like Malone pushed him hard. And Bol Bol, rather than rising to the occasion, backed away. And then I read that wondering, is that what's going on with Bones Highland right now? Because if you believed that him and Malone could make it work, that Bones, on one hand, I could see being a franchise player really good for the next 5, 7 years, 10 years, and he's a really big part of your organization. Bigger than Will Barton. Will Barton was there for a while. People forget that. But bigger than that. And on the other hand, I could see him and the turnovers and sticky ball and all that stuff consuming him to being that's who he is as a player. Which direction is he going to go? And I think that's the biggest concern for Calvin Booth right now and Michael Malone is when they look at it and go, okay, Bones is at this fork in the road. He's either going to turn out and be a really solid player and consistent for us and distribute and work with Joker, or he's going to go down this path of Will Barton doesn't quite fit. Because we've talked about it this year, Angel. It feels like this team has been better without Joker. Like when he's not there, like when he's out, they have played better. Not better than when he's on the floor, but last year, that's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, we're not freaking out when Jokic is
right. It's not like, oh God, this team can't even hang. They can. They were close with Milwaukee, which I was surprised by that. But I think that's because this team is taking on the image of Nikola Jokic. They're learning, okay, we can still distribute. We can still pass like crazy, and that's how we're going to win because Joker has built that on when he's on the floor. Let's try to do what he does a little bit. Bones hasn't taken on that Joker image just yet. Bruce Brown, you're seeing it. Michael Porter Jr., you'll see a quick pump fake and a little drop off once in a while. Some unique passes from him. Aaron Gordon, too. You're not seeing that with Bones. 47 minutes after the hour. Quick break coming up. We'll wrap up the show. On the other side, I'll get to what's on TV. My final thoughts, at least for today, on the head coaching search and where the Broncos stand. I did see this, though. Mike Kliss just posted out that DeMeco Ryans has not informed the Broncos that he didn't want the job, that he wasn't taking it.
What is going on?
And the Texans have not offered DeMeco Ryans a contract yet. There has been no announcement about DeMeco Ryans. And so we all thought second interview, it's as good as gold. We thought he wouldn't leave there. He has left the building with no contract, with no sniff of it yet. And Mike Kliss just tweeted out that the rumors yesterday were false then, that DeMeco Ryans didn't tell the organization that he was pulling his name out of consideration. So he is still in the mix.
So are the Texans still in the mix for Peyton then? Are we going to get on the show tomorrow and it's like, actually, all the reports we talked about right now
every
are false?
Day. Well, okay, these are trusted reporters, right? So it's not like we're just coming on here making stuff up. I'm Mike Kliss. While Texans announced they have completed second interview with DeMeco Ryans, there's been no announcement of a deal. Ryans and his representation have not informed the Broncos he is withdrawing from their head coaching search. Could be nothing.
Then where did that come from?
Could be something. I don't know. Mike Kliss was the one
there's
posted.
There's like 50 different conflicting reports. One day it's true, the next day it's not true.
Kliss was the one who posted yesterday that DeMeco Ryans was pulling his name out, right? Wasn't he? I want to be clear on that. We'll talk about it next. 49 after the hour. It's a whole show powered by PDC Energy on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFK.
The UNC Bears playing Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
This is Clay Millen, quarterback for the Green and Gold, and you're listening to the whole show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Okay, so I have to correct that. Mike Kliss was not the one yesterday that posted that DeMeco Ryans pulled his name out. It was Woody Page. Woody Page, both respected guys. You know, Woody was a Denver Post writer for so long and then does he still do his ESPN stuff? He used to. But Denver connections, and then, of course, Kliss, Denver connections. So you got Woody Page yesterday tweeting out that DeMeco Ryans has informed the Broncos that he's pulling out of the consideration for the Broncos. And now Kliss today is saying that DeMeco Ryans just finished his interview with Houston and there has been no offer or announcement yet, and he has not informed the Broncos that he is pulling out of their consideration for that job. Why? What's happening?
It feels like this shouldn't be happening. The amount of insiders that we have in the NFL, Surely someone's got to have the right information. Is this just Rappaport? We just got to go talk to him?
I guess. Is this Greg Penner not understanding how things work in Denver? So there's nobody's getting a tick because he's new.
Does he know which part of his membership or front office knows these insiders?
I'm sure he is building that, but it's like you take a new job. If somebody's not clear-cut and saying, hey, these are the insiders, by the way, these are our friends, they're allies on the media, these guys are kind of jerks over here, whatever, nobody's getting the scoop. Guys that I love and respect are not getting the scoop.
Somebody has to be right.
Who's getting the scoop? I mean, do they need me to go down there and Ed Lamet, Angel? Because I got a scoop once.
You did. You broke some news.
I did. But I have no freaking idea who it's going to be for the Broncos. No clue.
You're not telling us, or you don't know?
That's exactly right.
All right.
I know things. I know a few things. No. If I was told by somebody in the organization and said,
you knew,
don't
you wouldn't bring
it.
Tanner in to argue for an hour.
Yeah, that's true.
Or you're just messing with them because you know it's not Peyton.
I wish that I knew it was not Peyton and I was messing with him. That would be the ultimate thing for me, was just to have him make all these points that are meaningless because I know it's not Sean Payton. Oh, boy. So it could still be D'Amico Ryans. Is D'Amico Ryans back in the fold here? What is going on? And there's still this idea, Angel, that there's a mystery candidate out there. Is the mystery candidate just Sean Payton? Who is it? I'm done. I want to know who the head coach of the Denver Broncos is. I'm ready to find out. Well, we'll figure it out, I guess. We'll figure it out. We'll find out tomorrow. We'll see. It's going to be crazy. We might know tomorrow. We might know the next day. We might know next week. Sean Payton said on the Fox report that we would know more this week. Well, it's Tuesday, so maybe tomorrow's the day. That'll do it for us. We'll be back at it on a Wednesday. A lot of fun today. Thanks to Mike Brohard, Steve Smiley, Tanner Schwint, and, of course, the Pro Bowler, Patrick Surtain. Fun show today. We'll be back at it tomorrow. Good night, Northern Colorado.